Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Well, it's Wednesday. Happy hump day to everyone. My name is Patrick Coffin. I want to thank the good people at Ascension Parish in Tierra Santa for hosting me last night. We had a very large, very friendly crowd, and people went away happy, or they seemed to. Good Q&A session. So thank you very much to everyone who has supported our summer series. Tim Staples is going to be at Santa Sofia Parish very shortly. Go to Catholic.com. Click on the summer series tab. It's right at the top there. You can't miss it. If it's not currently displaying, just hit the little arrow and you'll get to it to find out more time and specific dates. So thank you to all those fine people. Here's the number. It's toll free, 888-31-TRUTH. Catholic Answers Live exists to explain and defend the teachings of our Lord Jesus Christ and the church that he founded, the Catholic Church. We talk about everything under the sun, and today we're going to talk about the journey from humdrum to holy, how to see the presence of God in everyday things, how to live according to the church's liturgical calendar, how to bring to bear the grace of God in all your decisions. Joining us in the second hour is our friend Father Ed Broom, and he has a book called From Humdrum to Holy. I know you're going to love Father Ed. He's an Ignatian Marian expert in spiritual direction. He's an author and a pastor in Hawaiian Gardens, California. That's the second hour today. The first hour topic, I can't wait to get into it because we often address atheists and atheism, but we don't present our own arguments. Today we're going to drill deep into some practical, easy, relatively easy to understand rational approaches to God's existence. We'll crank through a couple of so-called proofs with apologist extraordinaire Carlo Broussard, who's here in all his handsomeness, adjusting his microphone, pointing at the equipment. Hey, Carlo.
Hey, Patrick. It's great to be with you, buddy.
Yeah, cameras are on, so go to youtube.com/CatholicCom to see Carlo and his new fake bald head wig. It looks so real.
It's not quite fake, my friend. It's
what
real.
About the mouth mullet? I mean, the goatee. That is...
Well, we're working on that. That's we're trying good. To transform it into fakeness, into realness.
Good. That's
trying to make it. I'm waiting for the white hair, and then it'll officially be a real goatee.
Well, Tim Staples uses white spray paint, I'm pretty sure. Carlo, I'm glad we're doing this topic because we're often a little bit on the defensive as an apostolate because we end up shooting holes in the arguments of atheists. Today, we're going to present a couple of arguments, rational approaches for God's existence. Some of them are complicated. Maybe we'll start with the kalam argument, or the cosmological argument.
Right.
What is a pithy way? Because this is it's my personal favorite.
Mm-hmm.
As far as being airtight and relatively easy to understand, you don't need to have a degree in physics to get the point of the kalam, aka the cosmological argument. How does it run?
Yeah. Well, first of all, it's made famous by the Christian apologists, Dr. William Lane Craig, coming from the Arabic philosopher Muhammad al-Ghazali.
Mm-hmm.
And it basically flows or runs as follows. If the universe, and when we speak about the universe, we speak of all physical time and matter. If the universe had a beginning, then it would need a cause outside of itself. The universe had a beginning, therefore the universe has a cause outside of itself. And then we would go through a conceptual analysis, a philosophical analysis of what this sort of transcendent cause would be. Right off the bat, you can kind of see how it would be immaterial beyond time, space, and matter itself. Mm-hmm. It would at least at this point in the argument have to have enough power to bring things into existence from nothing and create ex nihilo. And then it would be timeless outside at least physical time. But you would also have to employ other metaphysical principles and arguments in order to arrive at the God of classical theism, namely ipsum esse subsistens, you know, the God who is pure being, the God who is pure act, the God who is absolutely immutable and absolutely beyond any sort of change in time and thus eternal.
What's the English equivalent of the ipse esse? Because you said things.
Yes,
after.
That's right. Subsistent being itself. So you are a subsistent being. I am a subsistent being. I am a being that subsists. But when we arrive to subsistent being itself through arguments and through deduction and philosophical reasoning, what that basically refers is to the reality or the substance or the cause that explains everything that exists that we arrive at, and the argument is simply being itself, not existing in this way or that way, one way or the other, but simply pure being itself, void of any sort of potency or potentiality. But it's, as you know, Aristotle and Aquinas would work off of Aristotle's argument, pure actuality.
So God's essence is existence.
Very good point. That's right. His nature is to exist. There is no distinction between, as it's stated on a popular level, what he is, his nature, his essence, and that he is, his existence. There would be no distinction between that essence and existence, because his essence would be to exist. It would simply be existence itself. And that's the metaphysical conclusion. That's the conclusion that we arrive at through a metaphysical demonstration.
Is it an oversimplification or an inaccuracy to say that God, in a sense, doesn't have anything but is something?
That is correct. He doesn't have...
You can say he has attributes, but that's...
That's a way that we use the term in our language. Mm-hmm. So we would say, yeah, God doesn't have goodness. God doesn't have intelligence. God doesn't have willing power. He is goodness. He is intelligence. He is willing power itself, precisely because he does not participate in existence. Existence is not limited with God. He is unlimited in existence. He is existence itself. Consequently, all of the attributes that we speak about are identical in God.
The Kalam argument has this very interesting element to it, and that is getting back to the universe having a beginning.
Right.
All things that begin to be need another reason for their existence outside themselves. And I believe Dr. Craig, because I've interviewed Dr. William Lane Craig in our CD set, How to Talk to Atheists.
Right.
And he's the guy that Professor Richard Dawkins will not get in the ring with. He refuses to debate. Smart guy. He doesn't want to get into the ring with someone like Bill Craig. But he says if there's an infinite number of days that preceded today, then we would never have arrived at today.
Correct. Yeah. And Trent presents this beautifully in his book as well, Trent Horn being our colleague here and friend here at Catholic Answers.
Speaking about answering atheism.
Answering atheism, talking about how if there were an infinite amount of moments that we've gone through in what we call, as Father Spitzer would like to call, an aggregating series, where the series was constructed by adding one part at a time. You cannot achieve an infinite aggregating series. It's unachievable.
So infinity is an idea, but not a reality.
Correct. So an actual infinity in the sense of having an actual infinite number of parts within it. And so as Trent and Craig and others will argue is that if past time were infinite, that we would have traversed an infinite number of days prior to today or infinite number of successive moments, but that's impossible. And it's also argued that if we were traversing those infinite successive moments prior to today, we would never have arrived at today.
Yeah.
But we have arrived at today. Therefore, there cannot be an infinite number of successive moments prior to today. Now, what's interesting, Patrick, is that this particular argument, has to do with what we call in philosophy an accidentally ordered series. Or an aggregating series where...
By accidentally, do you mean, whoops, I slipped? Or do you mean in the sense of Thomistic, an accident versus a substance?
What I mean by an accidentally ordered series is that one member of the series is not essential. Its existence is not essential for other members of the series further on down. Like, so for example, if I have domino 5 being tipped over by domino 4 prior to it, I don't need domino 1, you know, moving. I can take domino 1 out of the series and I'm still going to have domino 4 tipping over domino 5, right?
Yeah.
So the Kalam argument has to do with looking at past time in this sort of ordered series of causality. Mm-hmm. There are many philosophers who will argue you can't have an infinite accidentally ordered series. And I think those arguments are very persuasive. But what's, and so some philosophers will call this a horizontal sort of idea of an ordered series of causes. But the other types, the other type of arguments that St. Thomas Aquinas employs in his five ways, all five of them employ what philosophers call an essentially ordered series. And this type of series has to do with every cause in the series is necessary. Its causal power is absolutely necessary at every moment it's existing, here and now, for the effect to be existing here and now.
And that's true on the horizontal and the vertical. Because Thomas's sake, because we're going to get into this, we have to take a break.
Yeah.
But after the pause, Thomas's prime mover and first cause are not just back in time in the domino
model. Correct.
They're deep in the present because the
correct.
Present is also continually being caused, isn't it?
That is correct.
Yeah.
And the beauty about these sort of arguments that employ the idea that it's impossible to have an infinite, essentially ordered series of causes is that the question of the beginning of time and physical matter itself or the beginning of the universe doesn't come into play. For we can, as Aquinas did, for argument's sake, acknowledge that maybe perhaps the universe has been here forever, no beginning, no end. Even if that is the case, we still must come to the conclusion of a reality that is uncaused, whose essence is existence, in order to account for the fact that the tree outside right now exists. And that's the beauty of these other arguments. So you have a great complementarity between the Kalam cosmological argument and these other types of cosmological arguments, commonly referred to as the argument from contingency or the argument from efficient causality.
Speaking of efficient causality, I'm looking at my enemy, whom the Bible commands me to love, the clock. We have to take a pause. We'll come back and open the phone lines up for apologist Carlo Broussard. Rational approaches to God's existence. We're tossing some traditional proofs around for God's existence. Maybe you have a question about what we mean by proof. I'll ask Carlo what his favorite proof is on the other side of the break and take your calls at 888-318-7884. 1-888-31-TRUTH. I'm Patrick Coffin. Carlo Broussard back, taking your questions on a rational approach to God's existence. Don't go away.
Don't you just love listening to Carlo Broussard? Did you know you can book Carlo or any of our other great speakers to speak at your parish or special event? Contact one of our seminar coordinators through the Speakers Bureau section on Catholic.com today to find out more information.
This is Carlo Broussard, and I've got a special offer to tell you about. How would you like to be a Catholic Answers Insider? The Catholic Answers Insider newsletter goes out weekly with special offers, interviews, free downloads, and all sorts of good stuff. And right now, if you sign up, we're going to email you a free copy of a special report I wrote called Defending the Eucharist: Three Bible Passages Every Catholic Should Know. Just text the word Catholic to 44222 and follow the directions, and you'll get your free special report right away. That's right, just text the word Catholic to 44222 and follow the directions, and we'll send you a free special report just for signing up. It's a great deal, brought to you from your friends here at Catholic Answers.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpa. In Luke 4:38, we read that after Jesus left the synagogue, he entered the house of Simon, whose mother-in-law was afflicted with a severe fever. They interceded with him about her. He then rebuked the fever, and it left her. Now certainly Jesus could have healed her when he first saw her difficulty. But by having the others intercede for her, they were able to show her love as well. As members of his body, we are members of each other. The whole matter of interceding for each other is the way he designed us to act. So what is the difference between the household interceding with Jesus about Simon's mother-in-law and the saints in heaven interceding for us now? Basically, nothing. The saints intercede for us, and we intercede for one another for the very same reason. It's all a matter of love. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
We're back. We're cranking through one of the great things about being Catholic, and that is the marriage between reason and faith, that we don't take everything the Church teaches simply as automatons or some leap in the dark, but rather it's a step in the light. And today we're reviewing some of the rational proofs for God's existence with Carlo Broussard. So you got a favorite?
Yeah, my favorite, actually, although it's a bit more complicated, but I think it's airtight. And it sort of solves a lot of problems in the process and overcomes many obstacles in the process. That is the existential proof of Aquinas and his work on being and essence. And we were talking about this earlier, talking about how when we look at things in our experience and we reflect upon them, we discover that certain things, they don't have existence by nature. Like, for example, the tree outside. I know for sure there's something to that tree that distinguishes it from nothing. Namely, its active being, right?
Its treehood.
Its treehood, right. Well, actually, that would be its nature or its essence. But that which distinguishes the tree from nothing, as Aquinas would say, would be its esse, its active being, its existence. It has an active existence, right?
Yeah.
Now, further, I know that that tree doesn't have existence by nature, because if it had it by nature, like if it belonged to its nature to exist, well, then there could never be a time when it didn't exist. Just like you can never have a triangle without having three straight sides, because three straight sides belongs to the nature of a triangle, right?
Yeah.
So too, if existence belonged to that tree outside, there can never be a time when the tree didn't exist. But it's obvious the tree at some time in the past didn't exist, so it doesn't have existence by nature.
And chances are excellent that at some point in the future
it will not exist. That's right. So it's possible not to exist. So it doesn't have existence by nature. Getting back to what we talked about earlier, how there's a distinction between what it is and that it is. Its nature, its being, its essence, and its existence. Now, here's the key. Everything that is such, whose essence is distinct from its existence, must be caused by something outside of itself. It can't derive existence from itself, because it would be causing itself to exist.
It's contingent on something else.
That's right. That's right. So it'd have to get that active being from some cause outside of itself. Now, here's where the argument kicks in. If everything was caused to exist by something outside of itself, well, then there would be what we call in philosophy an infinite series of existential causes ordered in an essential way. Getting back to what I was talking about earlier about an essentially ordered series, existential is just a big fancy word for a cause causes it to exist, right? There would be an infinite series of cause causes. But there can't be an infinite series of existential causes ordered in an essential way. Therefore, everything cannot be caused to exist by something else, and therefore everything cannot be such that its essence is distinct from its existence. So you arrive in the conclusion at a cause whose essence is existence and thus is uncaused.
Which of Thomas's five ways is that?
That would be, as there's debate about this. Some philosophers will say his existential proof is distinct from his second way, but I tend to favor Edward Fazer's argument that this sort of existential proof is his second way from efficient causality, that what Thomas starts with is the fact that things exist, and the fact that these things that exist, whose essence is distinct from its existence, needs a cause outside of itself. You can't have the infinite regress of causes in the order of existence. Therefore, not everything can be caused. Not everything can have its essence distinct from its existence.
We have an existent caller, and he's a contingent being receiving his causality. In fact, he's being held over the abyss of non-being by God's will.
Amen.
Want to go to him?
Let's do it.
It's Andrew in Battle Creek, Michigan on EWTN's 89.7 FM. Andrew, you're the first caller.
How's it going?
Welcome. Good.
Hey, real quick, Patrick, I have to tell you, I think you were wrong a month or so ago. I believe you told something to Jimmy that a pirate's favorite letter is R.
Andrew,
I regret to inform you that his favorite letter is actually the C. Okay, good. Now that we got that over with.
Andrew, this is the second time I've been wrong. I was wrong once before. It was late 1989. It was a dispute. And at the time, I thought I was wrong. It turns out I was right. But now you're pointing out another example. Thanks for that, Andrew.
You're welcome.
See, maritime metaphors.
Humility.
Carlo, my question is, how do we deal with atheists who kind of refuse to draw conclusions based on logic and reason? They continually ask why or how do you know that, or say we can't know that because we can't see that, or that sort of thing.
Well, I think I would take your last statement. First of all, thanks for the question, Andrew. If the atheist would say, well, we can't see that, well, then we're dealing with what is called scientism. And that is to say the only type of evidence they're allowing in the courtroom is that which is empirically observable, that which is subject to the senses, that which is subject to scientific investigation. But I'm sure, Andrew, as you know and as our listeners know, the worldview of scientism is a self-refuting proposition because there's no scientific experiment that you can conduct in order to prove the truth value of that statement, namely, the only type of evidence is scientific evidence.
The richest irony of all.
That's right.
That it's the scientism is unscientific.
That's correct. Yeah. That's correct. It's a metaphysical proposition. Now, in regard to if they're just not willing to go through the if the problem is they're not willing to go through the logical arguments, perhaps you could respond to the atheist and say, well, would you accept my claim by just saying, well, God exists without any sort of argumentation? Hopefully they would respond, no, you need to give me some proof for that. Atheists are very fond of putting the burden of proof on us as theists, which I would agree with. We're making a positive claim, God exists, and we need to provide evidence for that. No atheist would accept us by accept our belief in God by simply saying, oh, well, he exists, you just got to believe it. So that would be a second possibility. And then third, you could, begin asking him questions and sort of shift the focus and say, well, why don't you believe that God exists? If you see any inclination that he's willing, he or she is willing to reason through these things, you begin asking them why don't they think God exists, and then they'll begin to give some reasons for their either outright rejection of God or their agnosticism. Trent Horan's fond of saying, he always says, you could ask the atheist, what is the one argument that you think is the best possible argument for God's existence and what's wrong with it? So those are three ways, perhaps, that you could approach such an atheist. What do you think of that, Andrew?
I think those are good. I never thought about turning around and asking them questions because usually they respond to me with those things, but if I'm asking them the questions and they can't respond, they have to answer my questions.
There's the key.
That's right.
Can you prove a godless universe? What's your evidence that God doesn't exist?
Correct. And that begins the dialogue. And when they begin to go through those various reasons, you can begin to see the fallacies in the reasoning. You can begin to see where they're going wrong. Maybe they haven't quite defined their terms correctly. They might be misunderstanding our understanding of God. And they might be rejecting a God that we would reject too, as often happens in dialogue between theists and atheists.
Appreciate the call, Andrew. I'm afraid I'm going to have to make you walk the plank, however, for showing me to be wrong at least twice in my life. Appreciate it. This is Catholic Answers Live. We're coming near our heartbreak, so I want to ask Carlo a follow-up question about scientism. Is scientism similar or a synonym for materialism, kind of an inbred anti-supernatural bias?
Yeah, they go hand in hand precisely because if the only thing that exists is that which is material and matter, then the only type of evidence you're going to allow into the courtroom when it comes to the question of God's existence is material stuff,
right,
or data within the physical universe.
Mm-hmm.
Even if there's some piece of data out there that we can't empirically observe beyond our event horizon or something, the materialist would still hold out, well, maybe that piece of data will disprove God's existence, but it can't.
All right. Sounds good. Frank Sheed famously said he never lost a debate with an atheist and never converted one. We'll talk about the limits of proofs for God's existence and how they can buttress our faith as revealed to us by Jesus Christ and his church. 888-31-TRUTH, back in a moment with Carlo Broussard.
Catholic. Answers Live.
When it was released in the fall of 2014, the graphic novel The Truth Is Out There set the Catholic book world on fire with its unique and innovative blend of apologetics and entertainment. Following two young heroes named Brendan and Irk as they explored the universe of faith and reason. It got teens talking, engaging and entertaining them with eternal truths presented in a non-threatening way. Well, guess what? Brendan and Irk are back! And now in a brand new adventure with high-quality, full-color illustrations and a storyline that's easy to follow, they come face-to-face with the drama and mystery of God's plan for the salvation of the world. Get the young people in your life talking about things that matter. Order your copy of The Big Picture today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Spread the word. Catholic Answers 20 Answers booklets are the perfect tools for catechesis and evangelization. Clear, concise, and easy to carry, the 20 Answers series from Catholic Answers Press offers hard facts, powerful arguments, and clear explanations of the most important topics facing the Church and the world, all in a compact, easy-to-read package. We've got the information you need on the Eucharist, salvation, Mary, Islam, Mormonism, and so much more. There are 14 titles in all, with more on the way. The best answers by some of the top Catholic teachers. They're available individually at special bulk prices, or you can get a starter pack of our top 10 at a very special price. Call 1-888-291-8000 or visit the shop at Catholic.com today to get your copies of all the titles in this exciting new series, or ask for them at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Welcome back. It's Catholic Answers Live. I'm Patrick Coffin. Carlo Broussard's here this hour talking about rational approaches to God's existence. We've so far clarified that God's existence is his essence. He's the only being that has those co-inherences, existence and essence. Carlo, could you say that the other element to... Well, element's the wrong word again. Another thing that can be rightly said about God is that he's a person, and that element was divinely revealed in Exodus chapter 3 when Moses says, "Hey, what's your name? Who do I tell Pharaoh sent me? I am who am.
That's right.
I am who am."
Yeah,
so
we have,
I, first person,
yeah.
Amness, right? Existence itself.
Yeah, we have biblical revelation of what we've come to know through philosophical reasoning, namely that God is existence itself. And the personhood of God, the fact that he's not just some impersonal force, you know, like the force be with you, right?
Yeah, he's not the blob God.
but that he does, in fact, have intelligence and volition, or the willing power, the power to love. Those are actually attributes that we can deduce from the fact that God is pure act or pure being or pure existence itself, the uncaused cause of all things that exist. And from that reality, we can deduce that he has, for example, intelligence. St. Thomas Aquinas would argue and conclude with intelligence because he's absolutely immaterial. He's totally free from all matter. And the more immaterial something is, it's going to have intelligence, right? So you have a proportionality between the further away you are from matter, the closer you are to being intelligent, all right? So the fact that we have an immaterial soul enables us to have intelligence. God is purely immaterial. He's intelligent. We could also argue to God's intelligence from the fact that he is the infinite perfect cause, and all perfections subsist within him in an imminent degree. And since intelligence is a perfection, he's the first cause of all perfections. Therefore, intelligence would be a part of his nature. Well, I shouldn't say a part of his nature to be technical, but would be his nature itself. So he would be an intelligent being.
Could you say all that again in the exact same words? Starting now.
Sorry, Patrick. Yeah. I'm not that good, brother.
Well, I forgive you. I'm a Christian. I couldn't either, by the way. Let's go back to call, shall we?
Yeah, let's do it.
Tom in Columbus, Ohio on 820 AM, EWTN's St. Gabriel station there in Columbus. Hello, Tom. You're up next.
Hi.
Hey, Tom.
The basis of my question comes from a recent book written by Dr. Lawrence Krauss.
Yes.
Entitled Something from Nothing.
Yep.
Correct. Yep. We're familiar with the book.
Dr. Krauss says that the universe the nothing is microwaves,
right,
which are not matter, which do not have weight, but always have existed. And by a process called quantum destabilization that occurred at a particular point, this nothing burst forward into particles.
Okay.
And the particles subsequently over billions of years coalesced to form the universe.
Okay.
Yeah.
The nothing is the microwave background that can be traced back infinitely, according to Dr. Krauss.
Okay.
So he says that something came from nothing.
Correct.
Therefore, he says that God does not have to be present in the equation.
Tom, there's so much to unpack there.
Yeah.
Dr. Krauss fundamentally misunderstands the definition of nothing, because
yeah,
no matter what thing you're going to say,
correct,
nothing is the utter, absolute, singular absence of all. How would Father Spitzer define nothing? He's got a really pithy way.
Yeah, what's going on here is what we'd call an equivocation, right? We're using the same term but absolutely different meanings. In philosophy, when we say something cannot come from nothing, we mean nothing in the sense of a metaphysical absence of nothing, of being, right? The absence of being, absolutely speaking. When Dr. Krauss and others speak of the universe coming into existence from nothing, the nothing that they're referring to, as our caller was getting at, is sort of, you know, the subatomic vacuum state, the subatomic vacuum, which is like a low-level energy field. But what's interesting is the Columbia University philosopher and theoretical physicist, David Albert, he has a great quote in a book review for the New York Times of Lawrence Krauss's book, and he talks about how the idea of the universe coming forth from the subatomic vacuum state, or vacuum fluctuations, as they would call it, is no more of something coming from nothing than my hand going from, you know, my hand being extended, and with my fingers being extended, and then I develop a fist with my hand. All what's going on there is, in the vacuum fluctuations, you have elementary material stuff simply taking on different forms. And so, as David Albert concludes and many others, this is not a case of something coming from nothing, as we would refer to it in philosophy in reference to the Kalam cosmological argument, but it is actually something coming from something, namely the subatomic vacuum state, low-level energy field. You have these, as you mentioned, Tom, these microwaves. So you don't have nothing in the metaphysical sense. You do have something.
Yeah. I hope that was a help, Tom. This is something that Cardinal Pell got into with Richard Dawkins on Australian TV a couple of years ago. Cardinal Pell was grinning,
right,
because Dr. Dawkins was going on about a definition of nothing that didn't satisfy the definition. He goes, it's not nothing.
Right.
What you're talking about is not nothing.
Yeah, and even if scientists cannot, you see, the big problem is within the vacuum fluctuations and what they call virtual particles, these particles popping into existence, et cetera, without any apparent cause. That is, it's sort of an epistemological issue. They can't detect a determinate cause, mm-hmm, of these particles coming to existence, or even particle decay. But just because you cannot detect a cause, which is an epistemological issue, doesn't mean there is no cause, which is an ontological issue, which has to do with being in reality itself.
For people bringing harm to their skulls because of head scratching, epistemology is the study of knowledge.
Knowledge and how we come to know things.
And ontological refers to being.
Being, reality.
Being okay.
Existence.
The really real.
That's right.
Do you know who invented the subatomic vacuum state?
God.
His name was Hoover. Vacuum state. With that, we segue, retaining our dignity, I hope. Joe in Howell, New Jersey on W. Fulton J. Sheen, EWTN Radio. You're up next. Hello, Joe. Welcome.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Hey, Joe. What's your question?
So my question relates to the Kalam cosmological argument.
Okay.
My question is on what it means to begin to exist. So the first premise of the Kalam argument is that anything that begins to exist must have a cause. So in the kind of popular idea of that phrase begins to exist, we always conjure up this idea of something not existing and then in a subsequent period of time existing.
Right.
But that doesn't really make sense for the universe. There is no time, you know, so prior to the universe.
You're correct on that, Joe. We would agree with you that there is no time prior to the universe. Trent Horn defines, when something begins to exist, or how do we define something beginning to exist, in his book, Answering Atheism. Trent Horn being a colleague and friend here at Catholic Answers, he defines it as saying something begins to exist at a certain time if there was no other time before it when it ever existed. Now, I understand, Joe, that when we're talking about the beginning of the universe, prior to the beginning of time and physical reality, there is no time. And so the question is, well, how can we use this language of before and prior, right? That seems to be sort of the hang-up. And as many have pointed out, including my former mentor and boss, Father Robert Spitzer, when we use the term before or prior, it's merely in a linguistic manner, okay? It doesn't necessarily imply existence. So, for example, we were just talking about nothing just now, right? Mm-hmm. Well, when we use the term nothing, we don't intend to mean that it's referring to something actually existing, right?
Yeah.
Or a present or an existing state, you might say. It's merely a linguistic reference due to the limitations of our knowledge. The same would be with using the terms before and prior when talking about the beginning of the universe. So basically, when we talk about the beginning of the universe, we're saying the universe was not always existing. As Trent Horn defines, the universe, we could say, there was a time when it did not exist, and it began to exist, and that would imply the existence of a transcendent creator. Namely, the universe is not everlasting. It had a beginning.
Yeah. How does that sound, Joe?
That actually, I think there's a bit of a problem there. To say that there was a time when the universe didn't exist is incoherent. If the universe doesn't exist, there is no time. I don't understand that part. How can something which literally has never been non-existent not exist? Like, that's
right. Let me try to tackle it again. Let's say when we say that the universe began to exist. Okay, first of all, getting back to what I was mentioning earlier, we talk about using prior and before in a merely linguistic manner, not necessarily intending to have a referent or an object to reference. But let's just say this. God existed without the universe, and then God existed with the universe. So God in his eternity was existing without the universe being created or existing. And to say that the universe began to exist, then we say God existed with the universe. Now, I understand that we're still even using the term then, but that has to do with the limitations of our language. Because there is no time prior to the beginning of the universe, we simply have nothing in our language to refer to a state of existence, namely God's eternal existence, without the existence of the universe. And so thus we have to employ that language of prior and before.
We're sort of stuck with those, aren't we?
Yeah.
Though we know that time itself is part of creation, there was no moments before God said, okay, he's cracking his divine fingers, he's rubbing his divine hands, and, you know, shazam, there was no time before then.
And then even with God's act, in his eternal act and his will to create the universe, it's not that God's deciding not to create and then he decides to create, but he wills a created universe to come into existence, it having a temporal effect at some point, it would have a beginning. So it's not that God's going through duration and then all of a sudden changes his mind and wills to create a universe. That one act of will to create, which would come about, was mm-hmm. is in his eternity.
1-888-31-TRUTH. Heady topic, yes. Important one. Heady, deep, and hopefully practical.
Yeah, and I would encourage Joe to check out Trent's book, Answering Atheism. Trent deals with it in an appendix when he's answering objections to the Kalam cosmological argument.
We're going to speak with Margaret May in Fairfield, Maine in a moment. Before we take a pause, Carlo, can we say that we know through divine revelation that God is eternal Father before he's creator, because his creation is something that he freely willed to do. He was not required to create the universe, wasn't required to create you and me. So from all eternity, he is the eternal Father who begets the eternal Word.
That's correct. He freely chooses to create. Creation is not a necessary emanation from his nature. Mm-hmm. So the idea of him being creator doesn't belong to his essence or his nature. He freely chooses to create, and that creation comes about at a beginning, with a beginning.
And Marshall Mathers encourages an M&M nation.
M&M nation?
Yeah. Thank you. All right. Sir Nick is looking at me like a cow staring at a new gate. We'll take a break. 1-888-31-TRUTH, 43 after the hour. Stick with us. One more segment this hour with Carlo Broussard on rational approaches to God's existence. All your proofs for God's existence needs met cheerfully by Carlo Broussard. This is Catholic Answers Live. I am Patrick Coffin. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Archbishop Alexander Sample of the Archdiocese of Portland in Oregon. Keep that dial right here on Catholic Answers Live.
You should love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment, and it teaches us there is nothing in this life more important than our faith. And yet, particularly in a Protestant country like America, so many people don't share the Catholic faith, including many of our friends and loved ones. Jesus said we must teach others everything he commanded us, and that means an incomplete, partial version of the faith is not enough. We must do everything we can to help those around us become Catholic. To do that, we need more than just knowledge of apologetics. We need to be sincere friends and practice what's known as friendship evangelization. That's why Catholic Answers has just produced a new book by Devin Rose, author of the best-selling work, The Protestant's Dilemma. Devin's new book, Navigating the Tiber, is unlike other books because it shows you how you can practice friendship evangelization and win your friends and loved ones to the Catholic faith. Navigating the Tiber offers backgrounds on the different Protestant movements so you can understand where your friends and family are coming from. It gives ways to deal with anti-Catholic attitudes and how to diffuse them. It shows how you can find common ground by praying together as friends. It provides techniques for dealing with unexpected situations that arise. It includes real-life accounts of people who embraced the Catholic faith and what helped them overcome the challenges they faced. And much more. Producing books like Navigating the Tiber is just one of many apostolic works that Catholic Answers does, and we need your help to keep winning souls. To learn how you can help and how you can get a free copy of Navigating the Tiber, visit Catholic.com and click the Navigating the Tiber banner. That's the Navigating the Tiber banner at Catholic.com.
Pope Francis reminds us that it does not take a specialized degree in theology to become a great evangelist. We're all called to evangelize. Think about the woman at the well. After she encountered Jesus, she immediately went into the city and invited others to meet him as she had. You and I can go out now and do the same. And St. Paul Street Evangelization can help. Get involved today by contacting us at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Call now with your question. 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to the show, Catholic Answers Live, with Carlo Broussard, taking calls at 888-31-TRUTH on God's existence. Margaret May in Fairfield on EWTN's The Presence Radio in beautiful Maine. Hi, Margaret May.
Hi. I've got kind of a two-part proof of existence of God I wanted to get your thoughts on. The first being that the existence, or shall I say, the proliferation of mathematics within nature you know, like everything from how many leaves are on a particular branch and how they grow, and that you need all of this mathematical precision for anything to exist. And the second being that for any self-awareness to happen, you know, for any intelligence to happen, well, it's kind of like, you know, a spruce tree doesn't give birth to a pine tree. So if there is intelligence, then there must be, it must have been derived from somewhere in the very beginning.
Okay. All right. Well, a couple of thoughts. In regard to the first comment about, you know, the mathematical conditions that are necessary for existence, I think possibly, Margaret, what this touches on is what is commonly referred to as the fine-tuning argument, where we see within the universe that there, well, there's different kinds of design arguments. The fine-tuning argument has to do with the initial conditions and constants present at the beginning of the universe, which are so improbable, reason demands that there be a supercalculating intellect behind those initial conditions and constants that are necessary for the development of human life. But then you also have other sort of arguments or things about the universe based upon mathematical beauty, right? And mathematical conditions for existence, as you were pointing out, that doesn't have to do with the beginning of the universe, but complex things right now. And that would be an argument from design, which is referred to as sort of the intelligent design argument. So you can take complexity of things that are existing right now and reason back to the probability, the high probability of a supernatural intelligence beyond the physical universe. And then you could also take sort of these mathematical conditions that are necessary for human life at the beginning of the universe, and then reason to the high probability of a supercalculating intellect behind the beginning of time, space, matter itself. Mm-hmm. Now, Margaret, these are beautiful arguments that many find persuasive, and there are many fine minds in philosophy and in science that look to all of this fine-tuning and mathematical beauty within the universe and reason to a supercalculating intellect. But keep in mind, these sort of arguments are not metaphysical demonstrations of God's existence. They're probabilistic arguments, which are still legitimate and good in dialoguing with atheists. Mm-hmm. Now, concerning your second point, Margaret, real briefly, and that is to say, if we have intelligence, I think this is great because, you know, even the Catechism of the Catholic Church, Margaret, points out that we can come to know God's existence by way of the world and by way of the human person. So if we look at ourselves and we discover we are intelligent beings with a spiritual, rational soul, and once we arrive at how the soul is a spiritual soul, it's immaterial and is not dependent upon matter in an intrinsic way, then we can ask the question, well, whence did that soul come? Whence did that spiritual soul come? And through philosophical reasoning, we could arrive at an infinite spirit that is intelligent, directing and ordering our intelligence to its end, namely the truth. So I think these are two very good points, Margaret, to reflect upon and to bring up within discussions with atheists.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Margaret May. 888-318-7884, that's the toll-free number, 50 minutes after the hour. Let's go now to Ted in Centerville, Virginia, on EWTN's 1160 AM. Hello, Ted.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, sir.
Carlos, this is my question. Have we always existed, but just in a different form? For example, God has existed from all time, has never been created, will never be destroyed.
Right.
But didn't we exist in God's mind, just like unborn children today exist in God's mind?
Okay.
So therefore, have we always existed?
Okay, very good question.
If I can protect my guess, it's actually Carlos, K-A-R-L-O, no S, Ted, just FYI.
Okay. Okay.
Because I'm here for you.
Carlo, yeah, that's right. Carlo. Yeah, Ted, this is a fabulous question, man. It has to do with God's eternal knowledge. You know, the scholastics would divide God's knowledge, eternal knowledge, into two basic categories. What they called his simple intelligence, which has to do with his knowledge of all possible things that he does not will to come into existence, and then his vision, which is God's eternal knowledge and a single act of knowing where he knows all things that are our past, present, and future. And he knows all of those temporal events simultaneously in one eternal act. But here's the key, Ted. God, although God knows my birth, which was 34 years ago, actually my conception, let's just say my conception 34 years ago plus 9 months, right? God knows my present and God knows my tomorrow in a single act of knowledge. And he knows those temporal moments in all of their actuality. But God does not will that my present be existing, my actual existence right now, God does not will that my actual existence in all of its actuality, including its temporality, does not include my past and does not include my future. So God does not will that my past, my present, my future all exist at the same time in the temporal order of things. God willed my birth to not include my present. God wills my present to not include my birth nor my future. So we can't say that I, Carlo, have always existed in actuality with real being in all of eternity because God did not will for me to exist always without a beginning and without an end. Getting back to the beginning idea, God willed for me to have a beginning. But in from God's eternal perspective, in God's knowledge, God knows my past, my present, my future in all of its actuality, but does not will my past, my present, my future to be existing in the temporal order of things all at the same time. So it has to do with what we experience as past, present, and future in time, and then God's knowledge of that time sequence, which is totally outside of time and is eternal knowledge. So in short, no, I did not always exist. I began to exist. But from God's perspective, he knows all of time simultaneously, including my past, my present, and my future.
Ted, I do hope that was a help.
Yes, thank you, guys.
Great. Okay. All right, Ted, appreciate your call very much. 1-888-31-TRUTH. Yeah, if you over-literalize that where I, because I joke with my kids, oh, you're just an idea in God's mind. Well, does that mean contraception kills off a pre-existent soul that God's thinking about? We snatch God's thought by contraception?
Yeah,
that's not true either.
We do not pre-exist us coming or being conceived in our mother's womb. The soul does not pre-exist because the soul is the form of the body, etc., and we're running out of time. But the point being is that God does not will for my past, present, and future to be synonymous on the temporal plot line, you might say. But it is simultaneously present to God's one act of knowledge.
Well, that sounds great. Grandiose. 1-888-31-TRUTH. This is Catholic Answers Live. My name is Patrick Coffin, and we're trying to connect with our guest, Father Ed Broom. If that happens, he'll be here. If not, Carlo Broussard has manfully agreed to stay on for another hour. All right.
I'll try my best.
Okay, very good. All we can ask, 888-31-TRUTH is the toll-free number. Keep it right here on Catholic Answers Live. Check out our podcast, Catholic Answers Focus, catholic.com/focus. Coming up next, hour number two. Lots more to come.